to the reading of the Sioux City Journal for Sunday, August 14th. I'm your reader, Dagna. Today's mini editorial is written by John L. Sandman of Sioux City, and John writes, "On Thursday, as news of former President Trump invoking the Fifth Amendment splashed across the front page, the Journal had the perfect quote of the day from Shakespeare, 'No legacy is so rich as honesty.'" Again, this was written by John L. Sandman of Sioux City. Our top story today is from the town of Laurel, Nebraska, with the headline, "Family, friends of four slain Laurel, Nebraska residents continue to search for understanding." Ask Rochelle Eberling what his most vivid memories of her mother, Michelle, are, and she'll talk about trips to the Sycamore Springs roller rink in Sabatha, Kansas, the kind of place where a child can feel free and listen to their favorite tunes while a parent watches from a distance. Rochelle also remembers the numerous birthday parties her mom carefully planned for her at the local Dairy Queen. Blizzards and ice cream cakes and dilly bars ruled the day. When Rochelle and her siblings wanted to unwind at home and watch a movie, Michelle would almost always acquiesce and join them in the warm glow of the television. "She just wanted to be with us," Rochelle said. If other people were in times of turmoil, Rochelle said her mom acted as a source of strength. She was definitely the first one some people called to get a voice of reason or sympathy or any kind of condolences, Rochelle said. Now, Rochelle is getting calls of condolence from other people after her mother, Michelle Eberling, 53, was one of four people found dead on Thursday, August 4th, at two different crime scenes in the 1,000-person town of Laurel, Nebraska. About 2 years ago, Michelle Eberling moved to Laurel, where she lived three blocks away from Jean and Janet Twyford and their daughter Dana. The three Twyfords were lifelong Siouxland natives, though they only moved into the city limits in 2014 after decades of living on a farm south of the Cedar County town. Dana Twyford, 55, was apt to help her folks with chores on the farm and was especially fond of doing the laundry. A graduate of Laurel Concord High School, Dana, one of four Twyford children, also pitched in at Hillcrest Care Center and Assisted Living of Laurel for 20 years. Her main focus was serving up food, but Joanne Rathgerber, a former co-worker and charge nurse at Hillcrest, said Dana would try to brighten the day of residents whenever she could. She got to know each of them individually and always tried to make their day just as special as she could, Rathgerber said. Dana's mom, Janet Twyford, 85, was someone who worked as hard as she could to brighten other people's days, too. Born and raised in Sioux City, Janet spent decades with the American Legion Auxiliary and eventually became Nebraska District 3 president of the Auxiliary. Deb Becker, an activity supervisor at the Norfolk Veterans Home, where Janet sometimes volunteered, had an array of kind words for Twyford. "She was always a positive person, soft-spoken. She cared for the veterans and people in general. She just was a sweet, sweet person. I never heard a cross word come from her. She talked about her family a lot, the grandkids. Always a leader," Becker said. Jean Twyford, 86, was born and raised in Laurel. He met Janet Hahn in 1960, and they married on April 15, 1961, at the Mayflower Congregational Church in Sioux City. Much like his wife, Jean similarly spent a great deal of his life working for and with veterans. He notched 6 years of service in the Army from 1958 until 1964. He worked with the Laurel Veterans Post and the American Legion for 48 years and achieved the post of Nebraska State Commander of the American Legion in 2000, serving there for 1 year. Jean was a key figure in working to rename the stretch of U.S. Highway 20 running through Nebraska the Medal of Honor Highway. Daryl Harrison, the president of the Nebraska Medal of Honor Foundation, collaborated with Twyford on the project and was in attendance with Jean when the Nebraska Medal of Honor Highway sign was unveiled in South Sioux City in July 2020. In Harrison's eyes, Jean was someone who took charge when called upon. "He was a leader. In action, in doing, in attitude, in giving. It's those people who are the fabric of our society," Harrison said. Just over a week ago, the fabric of Laura was torn asunder. In the early morning hours of Thursday, August 4th, authorities say the Twyfords and Eberling were fatally shot by a neighbor who then tried to burn down their homes. The suspect, Jason Jones, 42, is charged with 10 felonies, including 4 counts of first-degree murder, 2 counts of arson, and 4 weapons counts. The 4 homicides have shocked the northeast Nebraska town and made international news. According to reporting from the Associated Press, by way of the Laurel Advocates' Roger Tyrone, the community of 5 churches and a little more than 1,000 people last saw a crime with multiple murders in 1918 when Dr. C.C. Sackett and Harold Cronover were shot and killed by suspected burglars they had been chasing. During the Friday, August 12th funeral at United Lutheran Church, where the Twyfords attended, the Reverend Matthew Quanbeck spoke about the cloud of confusion and pain still hanging over Laurel. Losing 3 family members at once is extremely difficult. But then you have how they died, how they were taken from you, and that makes it all the more difficult to process for you as a family and for us as a community. It's tough to get our heads around it, and probably many of us are still wondering if we're going to wake up from a bad dream, Quanbeck said. If anything's helped puncture the nightmare, it's the myriad of charitable acts and tributes springing up throughout the town. On Thursday, the Main Street Apothecary had tip buckets out to assist the Twyford and Eberling families. Over on the side where customers can get coffee and old-fashioned sodas, there was an option to pay for a cup of Joe with a metal washer, which is something Gene Twyford used to do as a joke. Through the early afternoon, at least 20 washers were deposited in a collection can. It's been very good, just people laughing and remembering the family, Main Street clerk Diane Nelson said. Another staffer could be heard saying, I wish I had a washer for Gene. Michelle Eberling remembers her mother as someone who did not know any strangers. If the family was planning to peruse citywide garage sales in their hometown of Fairview, Kansas, Michelle made sure to bring her daughter's friends along as well. Such sales offered Michelle the chance to add to her salt and pepper shaker collection. As the kids grew, Michelle would make a habit of calling her daughter, Rochelle, son William, and stepchildren Angela and Brandy to do check-ins. On the evening of August 3rd, Michelle checked in with Rochelle, who lives all over Oklahoma, who travels all over Oklahoma, where she lives and works as a sales rep. The talk was an opportunity to hear her mother's infectious laugh. That conversation stands as the final memory Rochelle has of her mother. A little after 3 a.m. on August 4th, officials responded to a reported explosion at 209 Elm Street, where Michelle had lived with her boyfriend Brian Welch. Authorities later found her body with 2 gunshot wounds. I don't really understand it, Rochelle said. I don't understand who would do this to her. But I've just been telling myself, she was just at the wrong place at the wrong time. That's what I'm thinking happened. I'm hoping that we find the answer to why, but I'm preparing myself to not know those answers. Rochelle also could not have prepared for the immense outpouring of support she has received since that fateful day. She's unable to put a number on how many friends have contacted her to say, I'm so sorry Mom is gone. In the course of a 30-minute conversation, her phone pings multiple times with notifications. A GoFundMe page titled Funeral Expenses for Michelle Eberling, which Rochelle organized, has already exceeded its goal of $10,000, and there have been at least 35 donations of $100 or more. We know the loss of your mother will be a heavy burden, one message from John and April Shankles reads. You shouldn't have to also bear the burden of funeral expenses. I hope our donation makes a difference. We are family, and together we will get through this. We love you, Uncle John and Aunt April. In the town of Laurel itself, Rochelle said she had a pastor reach out to offer help in organizing Michelle's funeral in Atchison, Kansas, which will likely happen on September 9, so relatives can have time to make the trip. The community of Laurel has been so great, Rochelle said. Even while being swept up in a wave of sympathies, Rochelle has not lost sight of the totality of the tragedy. My sympathy and condolences go to the other family as well, she said. Sometimes in these times, I don't want people to feel they're left out. They had to bury 3 people, and that hurts my heart. And I hope they find answers as well as we do. I lost Mom, but they lost 3 people. I cannot imagine losing my whole family. Dana Twyford was born to Jean and Janet Twyford on July 30, 1967, in Wakefield, Nebraska. Her obituary says she was an aunt who spoiled her nieces and nephews whenever she could and was an avid Nebraska Cornhusker volleyball fan who never missed a game on TV. While considering her time with Dana, Rathgerber, Twyford's former co-worker at Hillcrest Care Center, repeatedly circled back to a phrase that speaks to Dana's unwavering belief. She sometimes would have to walk to work, and there was one time when it was raining, but she walked to work and she was here at 6 o'clock in the morning. She was extremely faithful. Jean Twyford had a great faith and interest in people. According to Harrison, Jean was the kind of guy who would do whatever he could to help someone when they were down. Had this man needed $100, had he knocked on the door, Jean was the kind of man that would have invited him in, fed him breakfast, and asked how they were going to work to get him that $100. And that's what makes it such a travesty and a mind warp for those of us that knew Jean, Harrison said. Jean did spend years helping out with Meals on Wheels through United Lutheran Church. Quan Beck said Twyford would often stop by his office to share newspaper clippings and tell jokes. Quan Beck can still recite one about ministers. Back in the Old West, there was a church and there was a snowstorm, and only one cowboy made it to church that day, and after the service, he told the pastor, "That was a good message, but when just one horse shows up to the trough, you don't have to give them the whole load," Quan Beck recounted. So Jean told me that a few times. I don't know if it was a hint about shorter sermons or not. At United Lutheran, Janet Twyford was active in the Women of the Church, a charter member of the Sarah Circle, and served on the church council. However, per her obituary, the titles she boasted about the most were Grandma and Great-Grandma, or Gigi for short. These people did nothing but serve their community, serve their church, serve their veterans, Becker from Norfolk Veterans Home said. For Becker, her respite is in the knowledge that Janet and Jean and Dana are in a better place. Rathgerber said she takes her measure of comfort from seeing everyone coming together. Harrison, who described hearing the news in terms of being hit with a concrete block, said he's been heartened by how well local law enforcement officers and rescue workers responded. "That gives you faith that we are still good people out in these towns, and we have good people protecting us," he said. Quan Beck, who counts United Lutheran in Laurel as his first parish, finds refuge in Bible verses such as Romans 8:39. "Neither height nor depth nor anything else in all creation will be able to separate us from the love of God that is in Christ Jesus our Lord." Rochelle Eberling has found solace from her fiancé, from her uncles, and from a town she did not know especially well before last week. Now she's busy planning her mother's funeral. We'll now do a look at the 5-day forecast. Today, partly sunny and humid with a high of 86 and a low tonight of 65. Monday will be cooler with periods of rain with a high of 74 and a low of 60. Tuesday will be humid with times of clouds and sun with a high of 78 and a low of 56. Wednesday will be mostly sunny and comfortable with a high of 84 and a low of 58. And Thursday will be mostly sunny with a high of 84 and a low of 59. We'll now move to the opinion page, and we'll have from the Sioux City Journal editorial staff, we'll have cheers and jeers, thumbs up and thumbs down. Thumbs up. The Iowa Department of Transportation Commission deserves credit for routinely moving its regular business meetings from its Ames headquarters to other parts of the state, as it did last week in Sioux City. In addition to holding its monthly business meeting at the convention center Tuesday morning, the commission members toured the region the day before, getting a first-hand look at a number of completed projects and others in the works, including the new district DOT offices on the outskirts of Sioux City. They also heard from local leaders who pitched future projects, key priorities, such as the replacement of the aging Gordon Drive Viaduct. Commissioner Therese Yanni of Sioux City also hosted her colleagues and DOT staff with some fun-filled activities on Monday as they stopped by the Wells Blue Bunny Ice Cream Parlor in Lamar's and the Sioux City Railroad Museum. Thumbs down. Each year, we have complained about city swimming pools closing too early. We're tossing another life preserver to the concept again this year. If one pool, say the Riverside Aquatic Center, remained open until Labor Day, it would be a great way to keep kids busy during some of the hottest days of the year. If parks and rec officials cannot find workers, perhaps they could switch their schedules and staff the pool themselves. It's a good way to get to know the clientele and provide a much-needed city service. Thumbs up. Last Monday, the Sioux City School Board wisely decided to appoint a replacement for Julie Albert, who submitted her resignation, rather than call a special election to fill the remainder of her term. A special election would have cost local taxpayers up to $25,000 and, due to state law, could not have taken place until weeks after the November general election, meaning a new board member likely would not have been in place until late December at the earliest. We encourage local residents to apply for the board seat by the August 19 deadline. We trust the board will be diligent in reviewing all the applications and make the best possible choice. Thumbs up. We are encouraged by the number of readers who have called or emailed to encourage us to keep publishing a daily Bible verse on our opinion pages. We remain one of the few daily newspapers in America to do so. A recent change in the design of our opinion pages created required us to move the verse to a different spot. It now appears at the top right-hand corner of the page rather than its traditional place at the bottom of the page. For readers who have missed the daily quote that ran opposite the verse at the bottom of the page, don't worry. We are continuing to publish the quote as well. It now appears daily on page A3. We now move to the letters to the editor, and the first one is written by Daniel O'Brien of Sioux City, and he writes, Life. It always seems taken for granted, this collection of days passing quietly by. Every once in a while, one arrives surrounded by significance, the birth of life or its yearly celebration. Maybe the possibility of two becoming one, acknowledging a personal success or some accomplishment in competition. Maybe performance in song or dance. Anyway, just a momentary adjustment until the routine returns. Once again, to simply float along, neglecting to grasp the importance until the ever-present reality reveals itself. One's existence is wrapped up in those days. Still, the significance is not the total, but found in the human expression. Feelings shared within the moments, leaving memories of remembrance. Don't walk too fast or rush through the day. Time is rather an insignificant companion. Pressing one to look ahead, neglecting to look around, noticing the precious moment now gone. A possible memory tossed aside, and so it was, and so it goes. Another day simply added to the collection. Yet there are among the routine days voices that beckon for one's attention to absorb the value of the experience, regardless of its most common appearance. Tomorrow one will recall those yesterdays found within the unfolding of today. Life is funny that way. Again, this was a letter written by Daniel O'Brien of Sioux City. Our next letter is from a person in Spirit Lake, Iowa, Colleen Lemkuhl. I'm not sure if I'm saying that right. Colleen writes, Admiral Michael Franken grew up in a farming community in Sioux County on the western border of Iowa. He understands the challenges facing rural communities. He has spent his career in public service, primarily serving in the Navy, which includes a prominent assignment in Washington, D.C. He has the experience and the knowledge to get things done in the U.S. Senate. Franken will be a strong voice for Iowa families. He supports policies that will create good-paying jobs, improve access to affordable health care for all, and make college more affordable. He will also fight to protect our environment and to ensure that Iowa remains a great place to live and work. He is the right choice for Iowa at this important time. I met Michael Franken at an event at the Landings Clubhouse on West Okoboji. His sister, Marty Franken Nodland, hosted the event. Everything Michael Franken said, I agreed with, so I am voting for him. He has visited Lake Okoboji many times and knows our concerns and ideas. I grew up in O'Brien County, and my grandmother lived in Sioux Center, so I feel like Michael Franken is my neighbor. Upon retiring from 36 years of being in the Navy, he chose to return home to Iowa, now living in Sioux City. And again, this letter was written by Colleen Lemkuhl of Spirit Lake, Iowa. We'll now go to the column by one of the journal regulars, and this week's turn is from Jim Wharton of Sioux City, who is a former member of the Sioux City Council and a former mayor of Sioux City. He and his wife Beverly have one daughter and four grandchildren. And he writes, "The passing of baseball broadcasting legend Vin Scully less than 2 weeks ago brought a rush of memories about the magic of baseball, particularly to those of us who grew up with a transistor radio that seemed to be surgically attached to our ear. Scully chronicled the exploits of the Brooklyn and Los Angeles Dodgers for a remarkable 67 seasons. His career story transcends baseball. The Bronx native was keenly attuned to the many challenges facing both society and baseball as segregation persisted in the game he loved. I was born in 1952, and my window to the world was a $60 Montgomery Ward blue and white transistor radio that my parents purchased for my sister Judy. Before long, I commandeered the radio from her and used it to tune to radio stations across the Midwest to listen to Major League Baseball. Most of my time was spent listening to KMOX in St. Louis, where I heard all the Cardinal games with Harry Carey and Jack Buck. Our home in Nokomis, Illinois, was not air-conditioned, so summer nights were spent at the foot of the bed under the wide-open window with the small radio tuned to the Cardinals game tucked under my pillow. As I grew older, I began to recognize that men like Vin Scully and Jack Buck were doing so much more than calling balls and strikes. They were giving us free civics lessons on how to make us better citizens and make everyone feel welcome. The day was April 8, 1974, and I remember Vin Scully's audio account of baseball history. The Atlanta Braves' Hank Aaron was chasing Babe Ruth for the all-time home run record. Vin Scully was behind the microphone as Aaron came to the plate against his Los Angeles Dodgers. The first pitch was low for a ball. Dodger lefty Al Downing took his windup, and the next pitch was sent over the wall into the Atlanta night as Aaron hit number 715, one up on the Babe. The significance of the moment was not lost on Scully. Here's his call. What a marvelous moment for Henry Aaron. What a marvelous moment for Atlanta and the state of Georgia. What a marvelous moment for the country and the world. A black man is getting a standing ovation in the Deep South, breaking a record of a longtime baseball idol. It is a great moment for all of us. The significance of the baseball record aside, Scully's awareness of the racial animus that existed at the time was notable. As Aaron pursued Babe Ruth's record, he was subjected to scores of death threats that made the pursuit both difficult and dangerous. Scully was aware of that and made it a point to highlight the social significance of what happened in Atlanta that night. He could have called the homer and let it go at that, but Scully stepped up and said the right thing at the right time. Vin Scully bled Dodger blue. His first love was baseball, but he was so good that the networks put his talents to work and other major sports as well. In his last golf telecast, he bid his viewers farewell with this touching message. May God give you for every storm a rainbow, for every tear a smile, for every care a promise, and a blessing in each trial, for every problem a faithful friend to share, for every sigh a sweet song, and an answer for each prayer." Growing up in the Midwest, I had limited opportunities to listen to Vin Scully. Even the best transistor radios of the 1960s could not extend our ears to the West Coast. But when the Dodgers came to St. Louis to play the Cardinals, Jack Buck would frequently visit on the air with Scully. When Stan Musial entered the Hall of Fame in 1969, Scully was asked to comment on Stan the Man. His answer was simple yet elegant. He was good enough to take your breath away. As video streaming services continued to grow in popularity, the fans' exposure to radio broadcast diminishes. I am so fortunate to have had the opportunity to grow up in a different time when the voices of giants like Vin Scully and Jack Buck could transport a kid lying in bed on a hot summer night to any baseball stadium in America. Vin Scully did that to perfection. He was truly the soundtrack of summer. And again, this was an article written by Sioux City resident Jim Wharton. We'll now move to the sports section, and we'll have a story about Wayne State football. When the Wayne State football team beat two ranked teams last season, it put a jolt into the program. The Wildcats hope to keep that momentum rolling into the 2022 season, even with a new coach. Logan Masters is the new head coach for the Wildcats after former coach John McBenany left for a position at the University of Tulane. Wildcats athletic director Mike Pulwicki wasted little time in finding the new coach, knowing that their best guy was already on staff. So Masters was promoted on February 11th to take over the whole program. Coach McBenany is a very special coaching influence in my career, Masters said. I was out at Chiron. He's the one that pulled me back to Wayne, which is exciting, especially being a former Wildcat myself. So it's exciting, and then hopefully we can just keep building on last year, what we started, and we have a great group of guys on our team. We are really young, but a lot of guys have played a bunch. And so we're young, but we're experienced. So very exciting, but we got work to do before September 3rd. There may be a few things there a little bit different, but for the most part, we are who we are, and we keep building that off what we started last fall, Masters added. The Wildcats open the season on the first Saturday in September against UMary. Masters was with the Wildcats the last couple of years as their offensive coordinator. The offense produced the most yards last season per game than any other Wayne State team since 2014. They also ranked third in rushing offense in the Northern Sun Intercollegiate Conference. The Wildcats had 2,003 rushing yards and had seven different men rush for 100 yards or more. Anthony Watkins led that attack with 722 rushing yards. He carried the ball 135 times. He found the end zone 11 times, and his longest rush last year was for 73 yards. Watkins had a year of eligibility left, so he chose to return to Wayne to use it. The Wildcats also bring back Jacob Kaiser, a Hartington Cedar Catholic grad who missed the majority of the season with a broken leg. In his three games, Kaiser ran for 140 yards on 31 carries. Masters said Kaiser is 100% and is eager to see what he can do coming off an injury. I don't think there's going to be any hiccups there, but the best part about camp is we got some time to work him out and things like that, and make sure he is in playing shape and things like that. But he's been cleared most of the summer, Masters said. So I anticipate him being full strength and ready to go. You might be able to throw Karin Lynch in that mix, too. Lynch is a transfer from the University of Toledo. He spent the last two seasons with the Rockets and is a three-star prospect out of high school, as ranked by 247 Sports. He is a physical runner, Master said. He's got good vision and he runs with some violence. The cool thing about our running back room is that they're all a little different. The number two rusher among the Wildcats was quarterback Nick Bone. He kept the ball 172 times for 583 yards and 10 touchdowns. Bone's main duty was throwing the ball, and he earned the number one spot in the depth chart over the season. Masters said he'll start the season as QB1. As a passer, was 142 for 237 for 1,921 yards. He played in 10 of the 11 games. He had a touchdown to interception ratio of 14-5. If he continues on the way he's progressed through the season, it'll be a tough for someone taking because he's one of the top guys, Master said. Nick has improved the most on the mental side. He obviously a very skilled runner and quarterback, but the mental side of it being able to see plays before they happen, anticipation. Again, another year in the offense definitely helps things, but getting comfortable with it and knowing a few more of the smaller details, which as an offense we can keep growing on, makes us a little bit more dynamic and diverse for defenses. Bone's number one target is also back. Mason was voted by the NSIC coaches as the team's offensive player to watch this season. The hometown receiver had 35 catches for 529 yards and 3 touchdowns and has caught a pass in 13 straight games. "He is going to be a big part of our offense, just like he was in the past," Master said. "We'll use him in more ways than we did last year." Jalen Scott was named to the team's defensive player to watch. The 6 foot two 215-pounder from Muncie, Indiana, ranked fourth on the Wildcats last season with 43 tackles. Scott previously came from Ellsworth Community College in Iowa Falls. He also tied for first in the NSIC with 2 fumble recoveries and tied for ninth with 3 interceptions for 55 return yards. "They just fly around," Master said. "I think team speeds is all-time high that we've had since Guy here in 2020. We got guys, don't matter, D-line, linebacker, defensive backs that can all really fly and get to the football and create turnovers to get it back to the offense. The big one is always stopping the run," Masters added. "That run game always travels, being a quarterback coach. I think want to throw the ball, but man, I want to run the football, control line scrimmage, and defense. That's what we got to do. We got to stop the run, force turnovers, and keep building off. Last year, we were really good in the red zone defense. Keep building off that pay that people get down there." You are listening to the reading of the Sioux City Journal for Sunday, August 14th on IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind. We'll now turn to today's obituaries. Terry F. Coughlin, 69, of Sioux City, passed away on Tuesday, August 2nd, at a local care facility. Services will be held at 1 p.m. on Monday at Mayflower Congregational Church. Terry was born on October 7, 1952, in Sioux City, to James and Dorothy Knowles Coughlin. He attended Blessed Sacrament Grade School and Bishop Heelan High School, graduating in 1971. He was a Sioux City resident for his entire life. He worked at the local mailhouse in the delivery and pickup department for a number of years and also worked for many years at Target as a department manager. Terry was a member of Mayflower Congregational Church and was involved in the ministry of the church. He was a social man and was always helping others. Orla Del Arnold, 94, of South Sioux City, passed away Wednesday, June 29th. Services will be at 10 a.m. Saturday at Warren Becker Hunt Funeral Home in South Sioux City. Visitation will be from 5 to 7 p.m. on Friday, with a prayer service at 7 p.m. at the funeral home. Burial will be at Ponca City Cemetery. Orla Dell was born May 12, 1928, in rural Ponca, Nebraska, the daughter of Charles and Versa Green Polkinghorne. She was the oldest of 9 siblings. She lived in the rural Ponca area until 1941, at the age of 13, when the family moved into Ponca. She graduated in 1946. She married Dean Talbert, and they lived around Ponca, where Dean worked as a hired hand on farms. Together, they had 4 children, Connie, Kathy, Dan, and Terry. They later moved to South Sioux City, where their 4th child was born. Dean worked in the packing houses, and they also owned 10 rental trailer homes. Orla Dell cleaned and did the bookwork for 20 years. Orla Dell was a member of the Ponca Methodist Church and taught Sunday school there. When they moved to South Sioux City, she joined St. Paul United Methodist Church, where she taught Sunday school again, altogether for 12 years. She belonged to the United Methodist Women's Circle. Orla Dell had many interests. She did oil painting, drawings, and scrapbooking. She loved country music, history, traveling, camping, cooking, flea markets, having company, and cats. She cared for her family, her children and her grandchildren, sisters, brothers, all people, relations and friends, and her coffee friends of the 14th Street. Dean passed away on September 23, 1989. Then, 12 years later, she married Edwin Arnold in 2001. They enjoyed a few years of travel, country music, camping, and family time. She enjoyed his stepchildren and his family. Then age and sickness took over. Ed passed away on March 1, 2014. Mary Lou Fitzer, 91, of Newcastle, Nebraska, received her heavenly rewards on Tuesday, August 9th. She peacefully passed away at Unity Point St. Luke's Hospital with family by her side. Mass of Christian Burial will be at 10:30 a.m. on Monday at St. Peter's Catholic Church in Newcastle, with Father Andrew Sholm as celebrant, and burial to follow at Calvary Cemetery in Newcastle. Visitation with family present will be 1 hour prior to services at the church on Monday. Immediately following the burial, friends are invited to join family for lunch at St. Peter's Hall. Arrangements are with Meyer Brothers Colonial Chapel. Mary Lou was a devout Catholic and a lover of life, mother of two, grandmother of two, step-grandmother of three, and great-grandmother of five. She was born on February 17, 1931, in Newcastle, where she spent most of her life. She was the only daughter of Lucy and Frank Kroger. Mary Lou earned a teaching degree from Wayne State College and spent the first few years of her career teaching all grades and classes in a country school. After moving on from teaching, she worked as a banker for more than 30 years. She worked in Sioux City, St. Paul, Minnesota, and at the American State Bank in Newcastle, now Bank of Dixon County. Mary Lou married the love of her life, Louis Feitzer, on November 10, 1956. They were married until his death in 1980. Later in life, after Louis's death, she enjoyed the companionship of Lawrence Becker and his family. She was a lifelong learner, had a deep curiosity for travel, history, and places. She enjoyed many excursions with Lawrence during their time together. She loved road trips, reading, following current events, and visiting museums. Mary Lou loved to be around people and took every opportunity to socialize. She especially enjoyed being around family. Her relationship with grandchildren Connor and Casey Day was particularly endearing. She had a deep love for sports, especially Nebraska Cornhusker football and volleyball. But her favorite sporting events were when Connor and Casey played for the Ponca Indians. As long as can be remembered, Mary Lou faithfully watched Days of Our Lives, which she fondly referred to as her show. She would always welcome visits from friends, but would prefer that visits occurred between 1:30 and 6 p.m., after Days and before Jeopardy. She will be remembered for her vitality, engaging personality, thoughtfulness, excellent cooking, graciousness, and the love she bestowed upon people around her. All those who spent time with Mary Lou felt better after encountering her cheerful, loving nature. Mary enjoyed the life she had, fully lived it, and never expressed a desire for more. She was loved by all who knew her and will be missed by all who were fortunate to spend time with her. The family of Stanley Norris Navrud Sr. is sad to announce his passing on Friday, August 12th, at the age of 83. He died peacefully in his home at Dakota Dunes, South Dakota, after a brief illness. A private celebration of life will be held at a later date. Meyer Brothers Colonial Chapel is assisting with arrangements. Stanley was born in Soldier, Iowa in 1938. He attended the University of Nebraska and went on to complete his Master's of Business Administration at the University of South Dakota. Stanley had a long and successful career in finance as a stockbroker and certified financial planner. He retired from Smith Barney in June 2004. He was first vice president of his firm and active in the investment business since 1966. Stanley was a civic leader in the Siouxland and Woodbury County area. He served as chairman and board of directors for the Lutheran Services of Iowa. He was also a board member of Lutheran Social Services. He was an active member of First Lutheran Church of Sioux City, serving as vice president and other officer positions over the years. Stanley loved his Corvettes and served as president of the Midwestern Corvette Society. He was very active in politics, serving on the Woodbury County Republican Central Committee. Stanley had 8 years of service in the Sioux City Air National Guard. Stanley enjoyed spending time at his lake house on Okoboji and especially loved his time when his children, grandchildren, and friends came for visits over the years. Stanley was a proud father of two children, Stan and Joy, and his grandchildren, Connor, Spencer, and Noel. Stanley enjoyed his time traveling the world, Norway being his favorite, but was always happy to come home to the place he called home, Sioux City. E. Jean Carlson Hayden, 93, of Papillion, Nebraska, and formerly of Soldier and Onawa, Iowa, passed away Wednesday, August 10th, at the Josie Harper Hospice House in Omaha. Services will be at 1 p.m. on Tuesday at the Soldier Lutheran Church in Soldier, with Pastor Paul Cohen and Pastor Linda Walls officiating. Jean was born February 9, 1929, in Sloan, Iowa, to Edwin and Goldie Smith Carlson. She grew up in the rural area and attended Sloan Consolidated School, graduating as valedictorian in 1947. After graduation, she worked as a bookkeeper for the Hockessin Ford Motor Company in Sloan. Jean and Lewis Hayden were united in marriage on January 23, 1949, in the home of Jean's parents. To this union, one daughter was born. They were blessed with nearly 68 years of marriage before Louis' passing in May 2016. The couple farmed in the Soldier area until retirement in 1989. In 2000, the couple moved to Ottawa. In 2013, they moved to Trinity Village, an independent living community in Papillion. In 2015, they moved to an assisted living apartment at Trinity Village, where the staff and caregivers became like a family to Louis and Jean. Jean was a daughter, wife, mother, grandma, aunt, friend, and Mama Jean to the few others whom she had adopted. Her quiet strength and compassion touched many lives. Memorial contributions may be made in Jean's honor to Soldier Lutheran Church, Soldier. James Jim Jasper, 84, of Sioux City, passed away peacefully Wednesday, June 29th, at a Sioux City hospital surrounded by family. Celebration of life will be held at 4 p.m. on Saturday at John Pierce Mansion, 2901 Jackson Street, Sioux City. Meyer Brothers Colonial Chapel assisted with arrangements. Jim was born in Orange City, Iowa on June 23, 1938, to Henrietta and James Jasper. Jim went on to serve in the U.S. Navy from 1955 to 1961. While on shore leave in Los Angeles, he met his beautiful, soon-to-be bride, Judy. Together, Jim and Judy built a life in Iowa and had four children. Dan Jasper, Ginny Hunkins, Donna Robinson, and Kim Coffer, 12 grandchildren and 12 great-grandchildren. Jim's love and passion for traveling the open road led him to work as an interstate truck driver for many years. Later in life, he found his home with St. Luke's Hospital as security guard, where he would spend 25-plus years until retirement. Jim was known for his smile, making you laugh, and his love of Elvis. He was not shy about belting out a song when the feeling struck him. He always had a deep love for the Iowa Hawkeyes, San Francisco 49ers, American Eagles, Dalmatians, and possessed an uncanny ability to win any toy he set his eye on in the claw machine. Family has referred to this as his superpower. Jim is forever in our hearts, forever in our lives, and forever loved. In the frequent words of Jim, Vi con Dios, go with God. Juanita Faye Bishop, Sioux City, 74, died Wednesday, August 10th. Services will be August 15th at 10:30 a.m. at St. Paul Lutheran Church in Sioux City. Burial will be at Logan Park Cemetery. Visitation will be August 14th from 3 to 5 p.m. at Meyer Brothers Colonial Chapel. Bruce A. Morrison, Sergeant Bluff, 85, died Tuesday, August 2nd. Services will be August 15th at 2 p.m. at Community United Methodist Church in Sergeant Bluff with military honors. Visitation will be August 15th from 12 p.m. until service time at the church. Arrangements with Waterbury Funeral Service of Sergeant Bluff. Marla J. Crichton, 72, of Mobile, passed away Monday, August 1st at a local care facility. Celebration of life will be held from 5 to 8 p.m. on Thursday at Waterbury Funeral Service of Sioux City at 4125 Orleans Avenue. Marla Jolene Crichton was born May 1, 1950 in Logan, Iowa, the daughter of Fidel and Erna Price Wadsworth. She was raised near Climbing Hill, graduating from Woodbury Central High School. Marla married John Crichton September 6, 1968 in Climbing Hill. Together they made their home in Sioux City prior to John being drafted for the Vietnam War. During that time they lived in Alabama, Texas, and Alaska. Upon leaving the military they settled in Horneck. Later in their marriage, the couple moved to the Climbing Hill area and then to Mobile in 1989. Linda J. Dimmick Rosenbaum, Kennewick, Washington, formerly of Sioux City, passed away from complications of diffuse large B-cell lymphoma on Wednesday, August 10th, in Seattle, Washington, surrounded by her family. Linda was born July 18, 1960, in San Diego, California. She was raised in Sioux City and was a graduate of West High School, class of 1978. She worked at Iowa Beef Processors, where she met her husband, Keith Rosenbaum. The couple were married in Sioux City on June 5, 1982, and settled in Kennewick in 1985. Linda worked at Kennewick Irrigation District, where she was real property manager at the time of her passing. In 1987, Linda and Keith welcomed their daughter, Lacey Joel. Lacey was the light of her life, and raising her to be a strong and confident woman was her greatest accomplishment. She was a true light in the lives of all who knew and loved her. Bert Brian Ashley, 83, of Correctionville, passed from this life to the next on Wednesday, August 10th, at his home of rural Correctionville. After a long fight for health, Brian went peacefully in his home as he would have wanted. Services will be held at 10:30 a.m. on Monday at the United Methodist Church of Anthon, with the lay pastor Shirley Nelson and the Reverend Todd R. Schlitter officiating. Burial will be at the Oak Hill Cemetery of Anthon with military rites conducted by the American Legion McNiff Post 389 of Anthon. Visitation will be held from 5 to 7 p.m. today with a prayer service at 7 p.m. at the church. The Nicholas D. Jensen Funeral Home of Correctionville is in charge of the arrangements. Brian was born on July 5, 1939, in the Sioux City Hospital to Francis Frank Marion Ashley and Sylvia Marie Ashley. Brian graduated from Anthony High School in 1957 and immediately enlisted into the Navy, where in service he traveled to Hong Kong and Japan. On June 11, 1961, Brian married the love of his life, Cheryl K. Hammond, at Midway Lutheran. They were blessed with three children, Cammie, Ken, and Tony. Brian was a lifelong resident of Ashley Acres, his century farm in rural Correctionville. He worked that farm in partnership, first with his father and later with his youngest son, Tony. Brian was a farmer, cattleman, and entrepreneur. He loved to work with his hands and spent time restoring Corvettes with his sons and later his grandson. Brian loved to restore antique gas pumps and was known to mark his land with his own rebuilt windmills. He also built his beloved grandchildren and great-grandchildren a treehouse on his farm and enjoyed being there to support them in all of their sporting and dancing events. Brian had a passion for life, which he shared with his wife, Cheryl. Together, they enjoyed 40 years of vacationing in Mexico, 3 years of wintering in Texas, and, of course, their date night every Saturday night. Gerald Rigg, Sioux City, 83, died Friday, August 12th. Arrangements are pending with the Moore and Becker Hunt Funeral Home in South Sioux City. Hubert Hugh E. O'Brien, 85, of Wayne, Nebraska, and formerly of Ponca, passed away Friday, August 5th, in Sioux City. Services with military rites will be held at 9 a.m. on Tuesday at Concordia Lutheran Church in Concord, Nebraska. Visitation will be held from 5:30 to 7:30 p.m. at the church. Interment will be in Grand Island Cemetery, Grand Island, Nebraska. Arrangements are with the Hazeman Funeral Home of Wayne. Hubert Eugene Hugh O'Brien was born on June 17, 1937 in Shelton to John and Mary O'Brien. As a youth, he lived on a farm and played baseball. Hugh was a hard worker and worked at the gas station his dad operated and also had a paper route. He is a graduate of Grand Island High School and attended Wayne State College. Hugh worked for Peerless Irrigation in Kearney, Nebraska, and later the Kearney Foundry. While serving in the United States Air Force from 1955 to 1961, Hugh was stationed at the Lackland, Texas Air Force Base, later in England, Germany, and the Lincoln, Nebraska Air Force Base. Hugh married Phyllis Louise Ryder on February 11, 1961 in Kearney. He helped many students as a high school instructor of industrial arts and shop and driver education in Cedar Rapids. He also worked at Brandt Construction and St. Luke's Nursing Home. Hugh remodeled their home in Cedar Rapids and built a new home in Kearney. He also helped his children remodel their homes. During their marriage, the couple lived in Kearney, Coleridge, Cedar Rapids, Ponca, and then Wayne. During his retirement, Hugh worked at Sioux Tractor in Sioux City. He enjoyed hunting, jigsaw puzzles, hunting, bowling, and playing cards. He was always telling jokes and making people laugh. Memorials may be directed to the O'Brien family for later designation. Linda Lee Jennings, Sioux City, 74, died Tuesday, August 9th. Celebration of life pending. Arrangements with Meyer Brothers Colonial Chapel. Kathleen M. Galvin, Newcastle, Nebraska, 82, died Thursday, August 11th. Services pending with Moore Funeral Home in Ponca, Nebraska. Diane L. Cooper, Sioux City, 70, died Saturday, August 6. Services will be August 15th at 7 p.m. at the Waterbury Funeral Service of Sioux City. Visitation will be August 15th from 4 to 7 at the funeral home. Thomas F. Tom Collier, 81, of Sioux City, passed away Tuesday, August 9th at Good Samaritan Society in Lamar's. Service will be 7 p.m. on Tuesday at Christian Smith Funeral Home's Morningside Chapel. Visitation will be held 1 hour prior to the service. Tom Frederick Collier, the son of Forrest and Mala Collier, was born April 26, 1941, in Sioux City. He grew up in the area and graduated from East High School. On May 27, 1967, he was united in marriage to Sharon Moeller at Grace United Methodist Church in Sioux City. Tom was an eighth grade teacher in the Sioux City Community District for 40 years, retiring in 2002. In lieu of flowers, donations can be made to the Sportsman Club of Lamar's. Rex Thomas Radway, 8, of Hinton, passed away unexpectedly on Wednesday, August 10th. Mass of Christian burial will be at 10:30 a.m. on Thursday at St. Michael's Catholic Church in Sioux City. Visitation with the family present will begin at 3 p.m. with a prayer service at 7 p.m., all on Wednesday at Country Celebrations Event Center, 5606 Hamilton Boulevard. Arrangements are with Rex Winkle Funeral Home of Lamar's. Rex was born on April 22, 2014, in Sioux City to Kane and Kristen Radway. He lived with his family on an acreage west of Hinton, and he was a student in Hinton Elementary School, where he had many friends and wonderful teachers. Rex dove into life headfirst. He started walking at 9 months and never slowed down from there. In lieu of flowers or gifts, memorials are preferred and can be directed to People's Bank at 468 Titan Road, Hinton, and First National Bank of Philip, 103 East Oak Street, Philip, South Dakota, in memory of Rex. Vera Ann Weber Hamar, 85, of Dakota Dunes, South Dakota, and formerly of Jackson, Nebraska, passed away peacefully on Thursday, August 11th, under hospice care in Ponca. Service will be held at 10:30 a.m. on Tuesday at Salem Lutheran Church in Ponca, with Pastor Charlotte Eversole officiating. Visitation will be from 5 to 7 on Monday, with a prayer service at 7 p.m. at the church. Burial will be at Salem Cemetery. Vera was born September 19, 1936, in Valley, Nebraska, the daughter of Arthur and Ann Nitterly Weber. She graduated from Valley High School and attended college in Omaha, where she received her degree in business administration. She worked for several years as a secretary and bookkeeper, and also worked at Channel 9 television station in Sioux City as a cooking assistant on the television show called Open House. Donations can be directed to the Salem Cemetery or to Salem Lutheran Church in Ponca. Gary D. Campy, 75, of South Sioux City, passed away peacefully on Wednesday, August 10th, surrounded by his loved ones. Services will be at 10 a.m. on Monday at Meyer Brothers Morningside Chapel, with Don Neal officiating. Burial will be at the Memorial Park Cemetery. Visitation will be from 12 to 4 p.m. today at the funeral home, with a 3 p.m. remembered service. Gary was born on August 5, 1947, to Edward and Alice Campy. He grew up in South Sioux City area before rejoining the United States Air Force in May 1966. He joined the Air Force on May 12, 1966, completing his basic training at Lackland Air Base in San Antonio, Texas. Gary was stationed in the Philippines at Clark Air Force Base during the Vietnam War. Military medals awards included GCM, NDSM, Small Arms Marksmanship Ribbon, and Presidential Unit Citation with Oak Leaf Custer, Outstanding Unit Award, and Vietnam Service Medal. Gary received an honorable discharge. He belonged to the American Legion of South Sioux City and joined his membership for 34 years. Gary married his high school sweetheart, Colleen Hansen, on February 3, 1968, in Colorado Springs, Colorado. They enjoyed 50 years together, both loving country music and being members of the Strollers Car Club. Gary's passion was his 58 Chevy and his Corvettes. Later, Gary met and married Jean Johnson in March of 2020. They enjoyed a short time together before Jean's passing in October of 2021. Gary was an auto body repairman before joining the railroad. He worked over 35 years before retiring in December of 2008. Gary enjoyed his garden and sharing it with his neighbors. Always ready to lend a helping hand throughout the neighborhood, Gary's longtime and best friends were John and Smitty. John and Gary were grade school friends, Air Force buddies, and co-workers for the railroad. Gary had a very special neighborhood and friends, including the Strollers Car Club members. And that completes today's reading of the Sioux City Journal for Sunday, August 14th. I'm your reader, Dagna, and you can access a recording of today's reading on our website, iowaradioreading.org, at any time. And thank you for listening.